Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here this morning on our first case, which is 12-1484, in the matter of the fuel adjustment clauses for Columbus Southern Power Company and Ohio Power. The first attorney to address us is Stephen Norse.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal if I can. I want to thank the court for issuing a protective order in this case and just kind of wanted to remind the parties that there is certain information that we may not be able to discuss explicitly on the open record. However, we'll try to do our best in navigating around that and pointing to the record as we can on the public record. AEP Ohio brought this appeal to try to enforce the principle that a deal is a deal. And I'd like to set forth three different legal arguments for why the commission's recapturing of value from a prior rate plan was unlawful. Number one, the commission violated its prior decisions and violated res judicata by adopting this value from the prior rate plan. And I'm just going to hit these quickly, and I'll go back through them with any questions you have. Number two, we also maintain that as a separate matter, violated the Ohio Constitution's prohibition on retroactive application of statutes. And number three, that the unlawful retroactive rate making doctrine was also violated by this decision. So first, the res judicata. The prior rate plan was called the Rate Stabilization Plan. That was in effect from 2006 to 2008. And during that time, there was a bundled generation rate. They were fixed and pre-established. They were not subject to adjustment based on any cost. And so with respect to the issue in this case, the fuel cost, primarily coal purchases, the company was at risk for maintaining its supply adequate to serve customers below the pre-established rates. And as it turns out, 2008 was a historic year for coal purchases in a bad way. It was the all-time high price in the history of coal prices. It was extreme volatility, and as the auditor in this case testified, coal prices tripled from 2007 to 2008.
How high did the spot price get?
It was in excess of $100 per ton, Your Honor.
And was your client buying in the spot market, or did they have long-term contracts?
Some of both, but certainly the portfolio approach is to have some long-term contracts, and there is some spot purchasing.
What percentage would be spot?
I don't know that offhand, Your Honor, but I know there was testimony in the record. In 2008 and 9, there was a significant amount of market purchases. But I think the key point, the reason I mentioned that, Your Honor, is that when these purchase contracts are reviewed and audited, you know, the key question is, at the time the price was agreed to, was it reasonable, was it prudent? And that's by comparison to the market price at the time.
So over the course of the time period that's in play, your client was not only making some purchases, probably, I'm guessing the bulk of their stuff are longer term contracts, and it's spot just fills in some gaps from time to time. But the nature of long term contracts is you're continually entering into new ones.
Well, and
is that what part of the rub is, that some long term contracts were entered into when the price was high?
Well, Your Honor, the reason I mentioned the volatility, I mean, the answer is yes. You're always working your portfolio, so you're managing performance. And in this particular period, because the prices were so high, suppliers had a huge motivation and try to sell elsewhere. So AEP Ohio was in an unregulated fuel period. It was on its own managing the risk and entered into two contracts, really, that are at issue here. One was to terminate a contract that was originally a 20-year contract, and there was 4 years remaining, plus an option to extend an additional 5 years. So at that point in time, the supplier had approached the company saying the 2006 Safety Mining Act passed. There was, you know, there's tremendous cost pressure. This price that was the contract price at the time was 30% of the market price at that time. So there was threatened litigation. There was a lot of uncertainty about performance. So the contract was terminated.
What's the spot price now?
I don't know. I think it's returned.
It's way
to,
down from.
It's between 50 and 100, but I don't think it's that close to 50.
And how does the company's captive coal play into all of this?
I'm not sure what you mean by captive coal.
Coal deposits they own themselves.
Well, the utility doesn't own, got out of the affiliate mining
in the
90s.
They're rid of all their mines now?
No, I mean, there is a piece of property that involves, in this case, that was not developed and was not, there's no plans to develop it, but it was actually given by the coal supplier as consideration for this termination and as part of the consideration. At that time,
is that the $41 million?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, it was valued at $41 million based on a study at that time. That's what the company booked, and as part of that transaction, in managing these supplies during this period of high turmoil and volatility, the company did terminate the contract and made a decision to do that. That decision was not supposed to be reviewed by the commission because it was during a period when fuel prices were unregulated and the company was on its own. Now, here we come into the new plan, the Electric Security Plan, that started in 2009. That was based on a new law, Senate Bill 221, and it reenacted the ability to have a fuel adjustment clause. Fuel adjustments clauses are historically, a traditional utility regulation mechanism because the cost with fuel is material. It's very large and compared to the cost of service, and it's volatile. So the idea is to track the cost, review the prudence of the costs incurred, and then reconcile that with what the customers are
charged.
How did the
commission reconcile its outcome here with its outcome in the case that we just announced? It seems to me if one is retroactive rate making, the other is retroactive rate.
Well, no, Your Honor, let me try to explain that. The fuel clause, we don't maintain that adjusting the fuel clause based on review in the audit period for the actual costs incurred and that were accounted for and deemed prudent, that adjustment can occur throughout the plan, and that's part of what the company commission is doing
here. An effort
here
to be certain that the fuel adjustment clause is what it's supposed to be, a direct pass-through of the actual costs.
Yes. That part, the reconciliation over time, is permissible, and that's not what we're claiming is the retroactive application of Senate Bill 221. But reenacting the Senate Bill 221, reenacting the fuel clause, at that time the commission adopted, this was early 2009, adopted a plan for AEP to be able to have a fuel clause again and leave this period of unregulated fuel pricing. But as part of that decision, it went back to this decision. It was actually made in 2007. The contracts were signed in early 2008 to terminate this contract. And the second part of that agreement was to buy additional tons from the same supplier during 2009. Now at a higher price. So the differential in price from the terminated to the new tons was actually already credited to against fuel costs, $13.3 million. That's the only portion that related to the 2009 audit period, and there was a $13.3 million offset to fuel costs ratepayers benefited from that. What the commission's decision focuses on is the other part of the contract that was actually terminated. So the tons were gone, there was no contractual obligation, and the commission employs what they call the real economic cost theory, which is a fictional construct, we would submit, not based on the statute, not based on the ESP order that
allows
fractional
costs. Seems like there's a lot
of
fictional concepts going on over there.
Well, Your Honor, I just want to focus on this one for now, if I may. What the commission did was basically, even though the facts and the record show that this was the auditor said that AEP did, quote, an exceptional job, unquote, in managing this period of high risk and high turmoil. And it's clear that the company properly accounted for the costs at the time.
Counsel, if we can stick with that over here, with that point that it's your position and apparently the auditor agreed that everything that was reflected in 2008 was correct. If we agree with the commission here and we allow the 2009 audit findings to stand, what happens to the 2008 period? Is there any reconciliation that happens, or does all of the auditing and reflection that happened in 2008 remain the same?
Well, it's retroactive accounting too, Your Honor, in the sense that, yeah, I mean, earnings and revenues were booked in 2008 and it's water under the bridge. So the company would take a hit based on, you know, and in fact has already written off the amount that the commission captured so far, and I'd like to clarify the so far part, but it's a hit on earnings and in 2009, and basically that's the issue we have, is that they're going back and looking at things that were accounted for properly at that time, and basically clawing forward this value from the prior rate plan. And I think that's retroactive rate making, and I think it violates the prior decision of the rate stability plan to have pre-established prices, and there was not supposed to be any adjustment for fuel costs or reconciliation or review of management.
Your brief suggests that there's a violation of the KECO case, but KECO was a refund, and there's no refund here.
So there is no refund.
Tell me how, in your view, how KECO is violated or how it figures into this analysis.
Certainly. KECO and its progeny and all the statutes that go with it in Title 49 are collectively known as the filed rate doctrine.
As the what?
Filed rate doctrine in regulatory parlance, and it's in other states, and it's the federal level. It's a very, very common approach. And so what that means is the regulator approves the rates that are in place for a period. The utility is bound to charge those rates. And then if there's a problem later that's identified by a court on appeal or by the commission itself later, rate making is supposed to be prospective and fixes the rates prospectively, but you don't go back and repair or provide restitution for the past. And that's a two-way street. It doesn't just benefit utilities, it benefits
But what you're
customers.
Saying is that the commission can never go back. That's your argument.
I don't know that I would say never go back, Your Honor, but again, the exception, there is an exception, if you will, in this court, and River Gas has applied that. If you approve a rider, what's called a rider or rate adjustment mechanism, the commission from day one approves that, or they approve rates subject to refund, then during that period, there can be reconciliation, there can be review in the case of fuel decisions for management prudence, and there can be adjustments. But what the commission here, again, a deal's a deal. We live by that prior plan when there was turmoil in the coal markets, and now the commission in this current plan should not be able to go back and capture value.
Counsel, it strikes me, and I think I've maybe said that this last case that we just turned out, that set-off would be a better term for what's going on here. That is something that the commission feels was an overcharge for whatever reason. They match it up against future goodies that the utility has is anticipating, and instead of having one big check to consumers, say, okay, we're going to set this off against a future rate benefit that the company was expecting. Wouldn't that be a better term to apply to this case and some of the others where these kinds of issues are in play?
Well, Your Honor, the effect is the same, I think, you know, and if you're making up for past inequities or unlawful rates, quote unquote, with future, you know, future adjustments, then you're still engaging in retroactive rate making. You're still retroactively saying the rate that was the filed rate, even though it was the lawful rate that was the utility was bound to charge, is now going to be changed retroactively. So I think the effect is the same. But here the commission went back to this prior period and it was not just reconciling to the actual costs. And by the way, the 2009 costs were below market. And if the commission just looked at the 2009 costs, it would have been clear that they were below market and they were prudent costs incurred.
Mr. Norris, in dollars and cents, if we were to agree with you, what remedy are you asking for?
Well, we're asking that the adjustment for the offset, as Justice Pfeiffer referred to it, it was about $35 million, would be reversed. And again, the fuel clause adjustment would be reconciled to reflect that.
And as a practical matter, how would that affect the your customers?
I don't think that's in the record, Your Honor, but I suspect it would be, you know, it would be a few dollars for a customer, for each customer. It would be less than $10. And it would probably be spread over a period of a year or something like that. So it would be pretty small.
Thank you.
If I have any time, I'd like to reserve
you don't.
For rebuttal.
Mr. Olicker.
Chief Justice Connor, may it please the court, on behalf of Industrial Energy Users Ohio, my name is Joseph Olicker. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. IE Ohio's appeal challenges the Commission's determination to limit the benefits that were given to SSO or standard service offer customers. The Commission effectively allocated millions of dollars to AAP stockholder, and we have challenged that determination for two reasons. It's not supported by the record evidence, and the evidence that is in the record contradicts the Commission's determination.
So what are you asking for?
Effectively, the Commission got the order right in its first determination to give all the benefits of this contract renegotiation back to SSO customers. But then on rehearing, the Commission decided to limit the amount of benefits that go back. The Commission said that AEP has a process for allocating fuel, and as a result of that, it needs to also allocate the benefits. But the problem is...
To customers outside Ohio.
Effectively, the allocation goes to AEP stockholder, not customers outside of Ohio. But the problem is the Commission had no evidence in the record to support its decision.
Well, what percentage of the overall operations of AEP in terms of providing retail electricity is allocated to this company? We're just talking one company, right? Ohio Power?
We're talking one company, but the way it works...
So what percentage of their total haul from retail electric is Ohio Power?
It depends on AEP's fuel allocation process because they own more generation that produces more electricity than is necessary to serve its SSO customers. So the Commission requires AEP to allocate the least cost resources and their associated fuel to SSO customers. So it's a product of the price of fuel.
We all hate the acronyms because we don't deal with them every day. So tell us what SSO is again.
SSO is the default service, the customers that are not switching and taking service from an alternative supplier. But because AEP produces more electricity than it needs, there has to be an allocation. And the commission has latched onto this to determine that because there is an allocation of costs, there should also be an allocation of benefits. But the problem is there was no record evidence to show that this contract renegotiation impacted both types of sales. It sort of assumed the conclusion. And
so what's the dollar amount, like Justice Lansinger was asking Mr. Norris, what's the dollar amount that you're claiming should go to customers?
The specific dollar amount's not in the record because the commission never determined that amount. The number that Mr. Norris provided has not been disclosed, and the commission doesn't actually know. It's sort of left it up to AEP. And that's sort of the problem that we have here. The commission determined there must be an allocation, but it didn't do any analysis to determine how this contract would have been allocated between SSO and non-SSO sales.
We're not talking about the buyout agreement between the coal supplier and AEP? We're not talking about the $71 million?
We're talking about the $71 million, but what the commission has done is they said the total number is $71 million, but because AEP allocates its cost, it should allocate the $71 million between standard service offer sales and its other sales of electricity. But in coming to that conclusion, it never evaluated who would have benefited from this contract had it continued.
Well, in answer to Justice Pfeiffer's question, then, if you're talking about a $71 million amount of money, isn't that an allocation that goes to the standard service offers and the other customers of AEP? Or have I got it confused?
Well, the problem is the commission initially determined that all $71 million should go back to standard service offer customers. But then on rehearing, it said, actually, it's a smaller number than $71 million because of this fuel allocation process. But the commission didn't do any analysis to determine how the allocation should work. It just assumed that there's an allocation.
The question is not what the commission did or didn't do. What's your position on what should happen? That's what we're trying to find out.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Tell us what you think should happen.
Our position is that 100% of the $71 million should flow to standard service offer customers.
And that's what they ordered, but they didn't do an analysis.
They did not order that. They said $71 million, but then they left it up to AEP to do an analysis to allocate a smaller amount to standard service offer customers. Mr. Nurse revealed, I think it's $35 million is actually what they received. And our problem is it should be $71 million. And the evidence that actually is in the record that the commission ignored shows that there's three factors for why that's true. AEP is required to allocate its least cost fuel source to standard service offer customers. This is a significantly below market fuel contract, and it was intended to be burned in AEP's second most efficient unit. And if you look at pages 10 through 17 and 37 through 42 of IAU Ohio's second merit brief, it shows that all those factors show that this fuel contract, had it continued, would have been allocated exclusively to standard service offer customers. And
if we would agree with your position, do we need to send this back to the PUCO for a clarification of whether or not it's a $71.6 million refund, or whether it's a $30 million refund, or whether there should be a rehearing to determine how much it should be?
And Justice, that's exactly what we've requested, because the commission determined there must be an allocation.
What? I think he gave you two or three different options.
He just said yes.
Of course. We believe that our merit brief contains evidence from the audit report that shows the way the allocation would work, and we believe you could remand this and direct the commission to allocate all $71 million to standard service offer customers. But in the alternative, we've requested that you send this case back for additional proceedings so the commission can do the analysis that it should have done to support its order. So I think the most...
If that would happen, and if the $71 million would be refunded to the customers, what is the effect of that, as you understood Justice Lansinger's question, on each customer? How would that work?
The way the commission has applied this offset is as a reduction to a deferred balance that was created in the Electric Security Plan. If the commission applied this consistently with its initial order, it would reduce the deferred balance, which is going to be collected as a non-bypassable charge and is being currently collected as a non-bypassable charge.
On a monthly or
the deferred balance
annualized basis, what are we talking about in terms of American currency?
Based on Mr. Nurse's representation that the amount was $35 million that's gone back, it would have been a $5 million or $7 million a year reduction in the amount that will be collected from customers. But that number is not hard and fast. And
so it would be, to use the term I'm comfortable with, a set off against the deferred fuel cost that they're entitled to collect when all hell broke loose, when the last rates came in and the governor got involved. All of a sudden the commission went back and said to the company, defer the collection of some of your fuel costs. Is that basically, and to smooth out so there isn't such a huge pop in rates all at once?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that's setting out there money that was expended by the companies for fuel that they were entitled to recover in the year, in the appropriate years, is now going to be recovered over a five-year period out in time. And we're talking about setting this off against that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's how I get to
how my... is that any different than what this court just said the commission couldn't do in the case that we just announced? I fail to understand how it's any different.
Your Honor, the key difference is this court has recognized for over 30 years that in a fuel adjustment clause case, there is no retroactive rate making. This involves a variable rate structure that it's put into effect prior to the time that the commission has an opportunity to review the rate. Review is only retrospective and through an audit process as was done in the case below. And
what case are you referring to specifically?
There are two cases. There's an Ohio Power case from 1978, and there's also the River Gas case from 1982, which counsel referenced.
Counsel, can you explain that concept to me about the prohibition on retroactive rate making? The problem I have with it is, aren't they always based upon an audit which goes into past history?
In a fuel adjustment clause case, it has been deemed as an exception to KECO and the filed rate doctrine, which states that a utility can only collect the rates that it has on file. But variable rate structures are considered different in that there isn't a pre-review of those costs before they go into effect. And in the exchange for allowing utility to collect its volatile costs, it sort of submits to have them reviewed through a retrospective audit process. And I believe counsel has not contested that that's the case.
So to get to the bottom line of what's in play today in this case, you think $71 million should be clawed back out of the money that the customers owe the company for fuel.
That's correct, Your Honor.
In the future. And the commission initially said that would be the number, and then they said, no, company, go figure this out as to how much should be allocated to the customers who stayed with you, right?
Effectively, they determined that because there's an allocation process,
they'll
allocate it.
And we don't know what that number is, except for Mr. Norris's representation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You don't know what that number is.
I do not.
And if we were to affirm the commission, we still don't know what that number is, other than the representation Mr. Norris made today.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we're deciding a case that involves a black box that we can't see into and the commission can't see into at this point.
I would agree with that characterization.
All right.
In my remaining time, I'd just like to provide a few points in response to counsel from AAP. Counsel's claim that this is a case where the commission has retroactively applied laws. That claim has to fail because AEP has not demonstrated that it has a vested right that has been impaired. In the context of utility regulation, this court stated over 30 years ago in Ford Motor Company that a utility's right to collect and a customer's right to obligation to pay happens when service is rendered. AEP makes much of the fact that this renegotiation happened in 2008 when it had bundled generation rates, but that's simply irrelevant. This contract was only for coal that was supposed to be delivered in 2009. So whether it happened during a time when it had bundled rates really doesn't matter. It didn't have a right to collect the overstated fuel costs that resulted in 2009 at the time of the negotiation. And also regarding another point that customers were made whole by AEP's renegotiation, that's simply not true, and it's refuted by the audit report. If you turn your attention to 1-5 of the confidential audit report, the numbers that council provided about the impact of this renegotiation on rates are not the same that the auditor identified, and the commission has not endorsed the numbers provided by AEP.
What about the argument Mr. Norse makes, though, that a deal is a deal? And so when we set the rates then, you know, the AEP had to go through the hard times in order to adjust what it did and try to keep rates stable for the customers then. And now we're going back and changing what we've already had a card laid, already played.
I think the point is that this negotiation didn't affect the rates were in play.
When you say this negotiation, what are you talking about?
The settlement agreement that we're talking about today, the buyout.
Yeah, which didn't impact. Involved a coal mine and some cash.
Coal mine and cash, but the settlement agreement related to a contract that was going to provide coal in 2009. The negotiation happened in 2008, but it didn't affect those costs. The commission hasn't asked to change those rates. And also, AEP neglects to mention that there were other renegotiations that happened in 2008 regarding the same contract that provided additional benefits to the company. AEP has been allowed to keep those. So AEP was sort of on its own in 2008 because it had bundled generation rates.
But a couple of things that you said there, counsel, seemed to me to go the other way. If there were other settlements, other issues that also affected the 2000 fuel costs, why would they not be included? So where's our limit? Can you go back to 2007? Can you go back to 2006? Where's the limit that the adjustment, where the adjustment can be made?
I think the key distinction is it depends on when the coal was used for service. To the extent that the negotiations affected coal that was delivered and used in 2008, if there was an upside to those costs, then, or if there's additional risk from those costs, the company had to bear them. But if there are benefits from those renegotiations, AEP was allowed to keep them. But this contract renegotiation only impacted 2009 costs. So to the extent AEP had higher fuel costs in 2009, it flowed them through. But to the extent there were benefits related to those costs, it had to flow those through as well. So that is the key, is you have to look at when the service was provided as opposed to when the renegotiation occurred.
The part that the commission turned over to AEP to calculate and determine, the real numbers were unknown to the commission. Is that because they weren't presented at the time, or are we talking about confidential information that the commission is never going to see?
It's because it wasn't presented at the time. There was a lot of confidential information on the record, which you have seen, but the commission never took evidence about how the jurisdictional analysis, as they've called it, would have been done.
So the calculations or the resolution of this will be, depending on what we do, there won't be a problem that confidentiality of information is going to leave matters simply to the company to resolve.
Now that's why we've requested that you reverse and remand this case for additional proceedings, and then the commission can do the type of analysis that's contained in IU Ohio's merit brief, and then determine whether there actually should be an allocation of these benefits.
Okay.
And I believe with that, my time may be over.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McEnany.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Your Honors, the commission has been in the fuel adjustment clause business for almost 40 years. There is literally nothing new here. What happens in a fuel adjustment case, and what's always happened in a fuel adjustment case, is the company submits costs to be recovered. The commission uses an auditor in previous years, 15 years ago or more. That was done internally. The auditors were internal to the commission. Now they use an outside auditor. The auditor reviews the costs that the company has proposed for collection and makes recommendations about how accurate those costs are. That's precisely what happened in this case. Now, to, as Mr. Nurse put it, a deal is a deal. Well, that's what the auditor did. The auditor looked at the deal that led to the fuel costs that were being sought for recovery. That deal had three components.
Can you be specific when you're talking to us about what years we're talking about?
Yes.
Because that's the concern I have.
Oh, certainly. The auditor is charged to look at a specific audit period. In this case, it was 2009 approximately. It's only the purpose of the proceeding is to determine what the appropriate costs were during that period.
During which period?
2009, the audit period for this case. Okay, 2009. Not earlier periods, not later periods, just that period. That's what they look at, that's it. Now, to determine that, you have to, of course, look at the contracts that the coal was procured under. And the particular contract of interest here had three components. A deal is a deal. Well, this component, you had a higher price for coal, you had undeveloped coal reserves in West Virginia that were given to AEP, and you had an amount of cash that was given to AEP. Those are the three components of the deal.
And the
AEP only wants to look at one.
And the contract period was what, please? The contract period that you're referring to was covering what period?
I don't recall if it extended beyond 2009 because beyond 2009 didn't matter for purpose of the case. The focus of the case is entirely on just that one audit period and really nothing else. And it doesn't speak to what costs might be in a future proceeding. That is not relevant to the matter. So I don't recall how long the contract extended. I don't know if it ended at the end of 2009. I just don't recall that. So, but at any rate,
doesn't it strike you this is a really weird way to run a railroad?
Well, the reason that it's run this way, and one of the advantages of age is I can remember these things.
I can't hear you. Could you speak into the microphone, Mr. McNamee?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was. Excuse me. Originally, long ago, there were no fuel adjustment clauses, and coal costs were built into what we call the base rates for utility companies. In the 70s, coal costs started to escalate. With the two oil embargoes that happened, coal prices tracked the inflation in oil prices that you saw. And it became very difficult for companies to manage this. Their coal prices were going up very quickly, but rate cases couldn't keep up. And you had a situation where there would be multiple rate cases pending at the PUCO at one time. It's called pancaking. It'd be five cases at once. That became unmanageable, and a new statute was passed that allowed, that created these fuel adjustment clauses, essentially back 39 years ago. And the arrangement that was done, and it carries through to this day, although the legal basis for doing these things has changed, is that the company collects the money up front, but that money is subject to being trued up. And that's done outside the context of a rate case through these fuel adjustments.
So the truing up is 2009, right?
Yes, that's correct. And that's what we're looking at.
But you're dealing with a contract that covered more years than 2009.
Yes,
and so that's what I'm talking about. They've got that narrow window, but a contract that slops over in either direction.
Certainly, it's the nature of these cases that you're virtually always looking at coal contracts that were entered into before the audit year, because these are longer-term contracts.
Right.
And in virtually all cases, other than the spot that you asked about earlier, Your Honor, you'll always be looking back to contracts that were entered into in prior periods. And we don't care about what the rates were in those prior periods, but you do have to look at the contracts to determine what the appropriate charge is today in the audit period that's at issue in the case. And that's exactly what the commission did.
And how did the settlement in 2008 factor in here? Because we heard comments from counsel about the settlement of 2008 affecting the fuel costs.
There was a rate stabilization plan that was in effect previously, and unique in the last 39 years, during that rate stabilization period, AEP did not have a fuel component. It's the first time that's happened in 39 years for any electric company in Ohio. So that's all true, and it happened that way. And it doesn't matter a bit, because the point of the exercise below, the reason for that case was very simple and limited to figuring out what the coal was really worth, what people should have to pay for the coal only during the audit period. That's the focus of it. The commission isn't trying to restate anything from the past. It's not seizing any assets. This isn't a prudence case. AEP didn't do anything wrong. What we're looking at here, what the commission was looking at below, was simply trying to determine what coal costs. And to determine what coal costs, you have to look at the contract. You have to look at all of the contract. AEP only wants to look at a piece. You can't do that. You have to look at all the consideration. That's what the commission did.
But counsel, in terms of considering everything, we also have AEP's argument that if we are going to allow this kind of rate making, that it's not retroactive rate making, then you would also have to include the 2008 production bonus agreement. So if we were to agree with you that you can do this, shouldn't it be done in a comprehensive way? And did the PUCO do that here?
Your Honor, the company never presented the production bonus agreement for recovery in the case. There was nothing for the commission to adjust. That argument appeared later in the case, and you can't get something if you don't ask for it. But beyond that,
but isn't that the auditor's job?
Well, the excuse me. Beyond that, the
but isn't that rules, the auditor's job to make sure that it's a comprehensive review as opposed to whatever might be singled out?
Well, I think the auditor's job is to make sure that the costs that are sought for recovery are appropriate.
And if there's another agreement out there besides this one agreement, the settlement agreement, shouldn't the auditor have looked at that other agreement, if not many more?
That buyout of a contract in a previous period didn't have any effect on the price of coal during the audit period. There would be no reason for the auditor to have ever looked at it. It just didn't matter. That contract went away. AEP paid for that contract to go away, which is a curious thing since they got paid to maintain the other agreement that we've been talking about in essentially the same time frame. But there was nothing to be reviewed. There was no effect on the price of coal during the audit period. It was a buyout in a previous period.
And just to be clear, the audit period is the calendar year 2009 or what? You referenced 2009, and then you say the audit period. So I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
I don't recall the exact dates. It's
a
year.
But it's 1 year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. So, and that's traditional. That's what's been used for ever and always. Now, having gone through and done the analysis as it's always done, looked at the entire contract, what was necessary at that point was to adjust the amounts that AEP wanted to charge for coal. And to do that, it needed to take into consideration the other two items of consideration that the company had received, these coal reserves in West Virginia, undeveloped reserves, there's no mine, it's undeveloped, and cash. And that's exactly what the commission did. Now, it did so, it didn't reflect the entire amount of those items because it recognized, unfortunately it had to recognize that on rehearing, but it recognized a need to jurisdictionalize. Jurisdictionalization is a mechanical process. It's done by the PUCO all the time. And the point is to recognize that the utility doesn't just serve Ohio jurisdictional retail customers. Particularly with Ohio Power, you have a situation where power that's produced from the plants serve retail customers in other jurisdictions and wholesale customers that aren't subject to any state regulation at all. So it's necessary, since all this coal goes to one place and the power goes where it goes and serves these different kinds of customers, it's necessary to jurisdictionalize. It's a mechanical process. It's been done for a very, very long time.
Mr. McNamee, what is the evidence that supports the decision of the Public Utilities Commission here, in your view? Is it the auditor's report?
Yes.
And pretty much that singularly, or is there some other evidence, though?
Largely, the commission relied on the auditor's report. The auditor's very
professional. Does the commission have some problem, as Justice Pfeiffer alluded to earlier, that it's looking into a black box that it can't see? It doesn't really know what it's dealing with. It's just relying on an auditor's report.
This jurisdictionalization is a very this jurisdictionalization is a very mechanical process. The commission is fully aware of the amounts that were adjusted. It was necessary. It's part of the ordinary course of business.
Mr. McNamee, are you saying on the allocation part, when you talk about the jurisdictional,
yes. mm-hmm.
that you can't give the credit to, as Mr. Oelker was suggesting, all of the credit to the standard service offer customers because other customers also paid for the fuel costs, and so they don't deserve the entire 100% because there were other parties that paid for it as well?
Yes. Since the power, any AAP power that's produced can go to different places, can go to non-Ohio PUCO jurisdictional customers, it's necessary to reflect that. All this coal goes in one pile, it's burned in one plant, and the power goes to serve various kinds of customers at various times. So it's necessary to reflect that because the coal reserves were just coal reserves and the cash was just cash that applied to the entirety of the contract.
So how did the commission decide on the allocation that they came up with?
It had AEP do the jurisdictionalization in the same way that it jurisdictionalized any other cost.
Did it have the evidence before? Is that so? AEP did that on their own, or does
AEP did the calculation? And
so there's no information in the file over at the commission that supports the allocation that AEP came up with.
Typically, jurisdictionalization it's a mechanical process. The sales are.
Oh yeah, we understand that. It's doing the math, but it's a question of who's doing the math and who's looking over the shoulder of the person doing the math. And it's been represented to us that the commission just said to the company, "You go do the math, and we'll accept the number," without any further information. Is that what happened?
It is simply a mechanical process.
We understand that it's math,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
and the rates have been submitted. The calculation has been done, and so
they did the math.
Yes. Yes, and it's been submitted to the commission. The rates have been approved.
Did the support for the math?
Yes,
was
that
submitted? Because
rates are reviewed.
The other council, the council for the industrial users, says, "Hey, they just said go calculate this and tell us what the answer is."
No, rates are always reviewed before they're approved. So there were rates approved here, and they were reviewed by the commission beforehand. So. In sum, there really is nothing new or unusual in this case at all. It is simply a review, a fuel review, as the commission has done for a very long time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Norris, you've used all your time, but you may have a minute to sum up.
Thank you. Just very quickly, I'd first like to address the issue, Justice Pfeiffer, you're asking about. There was a compliance filing. There was a detailed accounting down to the penny of the credit that was given. And as with in any rate case, there's always a compliance filing afterward. That is part of what the staff's role at the PUCO does. They review the details
and that's
and
been
the calculation.
Done. That's in the file at this point.
That's, yes, that was filed on the public record.
Right.
Secondly, I'd like to go back to just Mr. Oliker's allocation argument, the substance of it. I mean, the auditor and the company witness testified that all the costs that were recovered from customers were done on the same jurisdictional allocation. So the same proportion of the costs that were recovered is the same proportion, the allocation that was used for this $71 million that the commission captured. And I would agree with Mr. McNamee that the commission has done FAC or fuel adjustment clause cases for 40 years. But as he admitted, AEP had a highly unique situation here and went out of the fuel adjustment clause into fixed rates and then back in. And that's that transition. There were two separate rate plans under two separate laws, two separate time periods. So it's false that the $71 million related to 2009. Clearly it related to termination of a contract that involved four remaining years plus an additional five-year extension option. And it was clearly a decision that was made at the time of the unregulated fuel, and the company properly accounted for it at the time. The only impact of those negotiations and the two contracts that were signed in 2008 on 2009 fuel costs were the smaller amount of tons that were purchased at a higher price. That was, customers were made whole, as company witness Dooley testified, by the premium, the difference in price, and that was the $13 million credit. So customers were already fully made whole for the 2009 impact.
Thank
you. We would ask that the court reverse the capture of the $71 million, or at a minimum to remand to the commission to incorporate, beyond the cherry picking they did, the $28 million bonus. That was reviewed by the auditor. It's addressed in the audit
Council,
report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.